If you have an environment where there's not psychological safety, where people don't, you know, don't feel that they're supported by the company, you know, or they don't feel supported by the team, or there's high work stress, it's being aware of those environmental factors that might influence how fast your people are going to move or not, or what resistance you might be met with.
Is your company built to last? Here's the brutal reality. Business lifespans have shrunk from 75 years to just 6. Only those who adapt will survive. Today's guest has spent over 2 decades navigating organizational change, and her groundbreaking work shows how companies can measure and build adaptability across 15 key dimensions. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead, because we believe that great leaders aren't born or made, they are constantly in the making. I'm Damon Lemby, and co-hosting with me today is Darren Bridget, and we're both from Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. Joining us in a moment is Deborah McLaughlin, and she's here to share how leaders can develop changeability, the essential skill to not just manage change, but to thrive through it. We'll be asking Deborah to share her insights on assessing team readiness for change, how unlearning fuels success, and why psychological safety is the secret to agility. In your book, you say the future isn't scary if we're the ones creating it. What do you mean by that?
Well, absolutely. I think that sometimes we feel like we don't have control, you know, especially with technology changes, you know, political change, everything that's happening. Our world is amidst with so many change. And it's easy enough to say, well, things are happening to us. But no, I actually believe that the future is not scary if you're the one creating it, if you're setting your path and seeing what your role is in it.
Well, this is the topic of your most recent book, Changeability, that we're definitely going to get into today. And for our listeners, this is really going to be a terrific opportunity to focus on what does it mean to be adaptable and changeable moving forwards? Because this is demanded of us in this AI world that we're going to get into. And you bring a ton of expertise to this. This is not your first book, not your first rodeo, you might say. So with that theme, can you give our listeners a little bit of your story, your background? How did you come to this moment of helping people around adaptability and change?
Yes, well, you know, I've also, you know, had a corporate career, and you know, bringing technology solutions that my organizations that I brought them to may have not even heard of. So having seen the organizations that quickly adopted, you know, changes in technology and were willing to give up, you know, their treasured semiconductor rooms sizes of computers to a desktop, you know, I've seen how they evolved. And so seeing who didn't make it and who did, you know, really started me on this liking ability of change and disruption, if we think of that. And then I've also, because I'm adaptable, when my commute from New Hampshire to Boston got, you know, sidetracked by a very long bridge construction, I never knew when I was going to get home to my nanny watching my kids, I decided to dust off my psychology license and go into practice. And lo and behold, the people who took up space on my couch or what have you were professionals working in the organizations facing change and were very stressed out with their teams. And realizing, again, like this essence of, you know, you can change or you can't change, or you can adapt or you choose not to. And now you have, you know, the repercussions of that. And then when I heard that there was a career called coaching in 2003, I jumped right into it. And, you know, really have been in it ever since, of working with leaders and teams and organizations, you know, facing change and disruption, as well as personal change.
Why is adaptability such an important thing to focus on right now? And then I think we'll start to get into your book, Changeability.
I think that there are several reasons why it's so important. So let's take them kind of looking at an organization or a team or a personal level. And from an organization perspective, the lifespan of an organization used to be like 75 years. So they would kind of reinvent their product or their process, maybe at year 45. And then it went to 15. And most recently, it's down to 6, which means if we are not reinventing as an organization and reimagining new possibilities for yourself by year 2 or 3 or an ongoing basis, your business might not exist. And so what's happening with teams and organizations and struggling leaders trying to get teams to be more adaptive is that they're faced with, you know, if they want to be relevant, they also have to step up to the change.
But as a personal level, I mean, it is a scary thing. And people are frightened right now because they're afraid, you know, is AI going to take over my job? Am I going to have to learn a new skill set when I've been really successful at what I do? And even, you know, what's going to happen with my, on my way to work, I was listening to the radio today and they were talking about, you know, government people returning back to work. Well, that's life-changing for many people after many years, right? And so it's really relevant in all three of those levels, you know, asking the question of, how do we react mentally, you know, to change? And are we really equipped with the skill set to adapt?
In your book, it's called Changeability. How do you define changeability?
Yes, well, it's really about having, and I throw the energy in there because I think energy is really important. It's the mindset and the energy and the capacity to be able to not only lead a change that you've been given, perhaps, but also to be able to imagine opportunities within obstacles to see what possibilities there might be for yourself or an organization or a team or a customer.
You really focus on a three-legged stool. Can you share with us what those three legs are and how they support each other?
Yes, and you know, I like that you use that terminology because I find it's a good metaphor. So yes, in the book, I use both storytelling. You know, some of my clients might wonder, is this me? And maybe it's a composite of you that is in the book. But really, it's three core, you know, three-legged stools, which is about change leadership, understanding, you know, that there's different what self-awareness of my ability to lead. Like if I'm a visionary leader, as a senior leader, that's quite different than a person in the trenches that's an executor or get it done. Or it could be different than somebody who's really a heart-centered leader. So self-awareness of my leadership style and how to adapt to other styles so that you bring people along. And then adaptability, which for the first time we can actually measure, you know, 15 degrees of adaptability of different dimensions, as well as change readiness and reskillability at the individual, team, and organization level. And then agility. I mean, speed is of essence, right? We have a desperate need for speed. And I'm not talking about agile in regards to systems or processes. I'm not talking about change in regards to whether you're using a Kotter method or a ProSci or whatever. I'm talking about the people aspect or change with those three-legged stools.
Can you give us like some examples of how you do that, especially if you're maybe not a visionary leader? As you said, you're more of a people leader. Like how should different leaders approach this?
Yes, well, I'll give you a favorite tip is that, you know, people tend to kind of fall into two categories, not stereotyping anybody, but there is either head, heart, or hands. So head is what is the goal? What's the vision? You know, heart is how is this going to be related to people, my team, my customers? And hands are, how are we going to get it done? Maybe an operational side. And so if you understand, if you can listen well enough to someone that you're speaking to and say, oh, that's a head, heart, or hands style of person, and you start to communicate at that level, then you can have a better, more effective conversation. So for instance, if somebody is a high visionary, they're not going to want to tune into all the details of the roadmap of how to get there from an executor type of person, you know, or somebody's heart-centered and you're not talking about people, they're going to feel like, you know, your change that you're proposing is a little cold and they're not going to buy into it because they're worried about people. So that just very simply understanding, are you a head, heart, hands person? And what are the people around you? And are you speaking their same language?
But then I would also imagine if you're more of a visionary, you might be more comfortable with changeability. But if you're more of the heart or the hands person, you might have a hard time with it as well. What do you say to those leaders who need to also embrace change?
Oh, yes. And as you can imagine, you know, my top scores of change leadership are both visionary, high coach, and visionary secondary, and my hands, I have to have hire people around me, right, to do that Excel spreadsheet or other things or build the roadmap of our schedule of delivery and things. So the answer is we can't be all three proficiently. So you have to ask, you know, how can I utilize someone on my team that's making up for my, you know, missing area? Or how can I, you know, if you're a business owner, hire for somebody? Or is it a skill that you, you know, can somewhat develop, but also know if it's something that's painful for you, maybe you only do it 15 minutes at a time for your business accounting if that's just not your thing.
And one of the keys to all of this is adaptability. So can you share why, Deborah, we believe that adaptability could be the most important skill for the future in general?
Yes, and I certainly could cite a number of different, research that has come out, but anybody can find those on their own of the statistics as to why is adaptability one of the top competencies for individuals to have, and why is it that executives, CEOs and hiring people are looking for people that are adaptable is because they know the environment is in a state of constant change. So they need people who can keep up. And so adaptability measures, how do I adapt, as an individual, but also what environment, do we need to be able to thrive and adapt? So for instance, if there's a lot of stress in your office environment, or in your team, or if there's, low mental health, or you feel like you're not supported by your team members, all of those things erode the viability of adaptability in an individual team or organization.
Do you ever find that people are adaptable on a personal level, but struggle with it at work or vice versa?
Oh, yes, totally. And it's interesting. And some of the feedback that I've received on the book is, what people tend to resonate is this one gentleman's story and Raj in the book, because Raj is a visionary, works for a highly successful cloud, company. But he sees opportunities, where the company should be going. He's looking around, the corners already, but in that mental state of struggle of like, how do I get, the resources, the buy-in from senior level people who want to focus on that, what's working successfully, that legacy product, our legacy customer? How do I run down the hall with my excitement and shout out my idea? And so it's a personal struggle because you can't just land a big giant idea. You have to kind of groom it along, so other people can get to it. And even with that change leadership assessment, I remember a CEO saying to me, oh my gosh, now I get why the ideas I get in the shower that I totally know aren't going to work just land dead on my conference room table with my executive team.
Do you have some tips for people around how to enroll people in your vision for change?
Yes, certainly, because communication is a key component of anything, right? And so again, it's starting with that, what's in it for them, understanding, if that person is a numbers person, right? If they're head all about, profitability or numbers, start, how your idea is going to fit in with the numbers. If they're a people person, then start with how it's going to be, great for our customers or whomever in the people side, or the hands, really tie it in, especially with the hands, tie it into how they could possibly do it operationally, because people are already overwhelmed with the number of projects they already have going on.
You said there was 15 dimensions to adaptability. That's more than I would have expected. This is a silly question, but what are your favorites?
My favorite dimensions are the ones that are particular to the individual, which is, how do I rate in regards to adaptability? And just to back it up for a moment, the good news is, even though there's that many dimensions, there's commonly three that are correlated to the top, like business issues. Like if you're looking, to improve retention, there's really three, that are associated with this. So there's correlations. But to get back to my top ones, which, for adaptability is mindset is one of the ones, which is, what is your view of any change? Do you immediately go into that hiding space of the dark cave? Or do you just sit back and think, is there opportunity of this? And then mental flexibility, which is, kind of holding even contrarian thoughts together, and or even thinking, like I might have a certain perspective, but also holding the thought, like, how might my customer think about this, or somebody else, right? Two different things. And then what's often talked about is resilience, my ability to bounce back from something. But I think adaptability is more about leaping forward than bouncing back. And grit, which surprisingly people might think, oh, it's great to have grit. I can just push on through.
But sometimes an overuse of grit means that you're, you know, you're overwhelmed, you're burning yourself out. So I, you know, it's not always a good thing. And then probably one of my other favorites, but under thought of, is unlearn, which is, you know, how do you step away from learning something? You know, we all had flip phones at one time, right? You know, now we have technology on our wrist. You know, learning something that you knew well or was even successful at and suddenly having new learning to take on. And I think that's what a lot of, you know, people are hit with now with changes in at their workplace is new learning and feeling like that kindergartner at the first day of school again.
My question is, how can being or creating a learning culture, learning environment help build adaptability?
Oh, yes, totally. I mean, really, I would say it's an integral part because in a learning environment, if it's also meshed with psychological safety, meaning that people can ask questions, that there's nothing, you know, foolish about it, that they can be unsure and seen as students, you know, that are learning, meaning that there's not an expectation that you should know this already, that fosters adaptability because it starts the mindset of that mental flexibility and you know, a learning opportunity and seeing new possibilities because as people are learning new tools, they're starting to think, well, how might I use them, right? Whether it's personally or professionally, how can this tool be used?
So Deborah, the third leg of the stool is agility. What is the difference between organizational agility and individual adaptability?
Yes, well, if we think about it, and again, removing, you know, the process mindset, we're not talking about waterfall or any of those processes, but the speed of decision-making and, you know, everything has speeded up, because otherwise we're going to miss the mark, you know, on something. So individual agility means that we don't have the time and the space to have, you know, numerous conversations about something. And what I find that speeds individual agility and decision-making and movement forward is if individuals in their workplace are really clear about what the goal is, right? It's been clearly said, but also if they also understand the decision filters that senior leaders might use so that how they decide about something. Because like you brought up the three-legged stool earlier. So to give you an example, I've worked with one client that has a three-legged stool in his business, in that every employee has to talk about anything that they're bringing forward in the terms of how is this good for our company, our employees, and our customers. And so every conversation comes forward with those three decision filters. And it doesn't matter what level within the organization. So people can be more agile to change if they understand the reasons behind it and the decision filters of their senior leaders.
Adaptability isn't like, it's just a free for all the time. You need to, like, what should you adapt to and what should you not adapt to? And how do you have some consistency within this process? I feel like that's a tension for people sometimes when it comes to understanding what should I be changing and what should I not be changing?
Yes, well, a couple of the dimensions that kind of fall into that context is, there's both thinking style, like am I a big picture thinker or a detailed thinker, but also motivation style, which is am I motivated to play to protect or am I motivated to play to win? And actually one of my client organizations was recently written about, I didn't write the article, but in a Harvard Business article about that complexity of the mindset when you have people who are play to protect and you have people that are play to win. And the truth is you need the balance because like with Raj and his organization, we need the play to protect people with the legacy products that have made the company so successful. But we also need the play to win to look around what's coming around the corners. And so it's understanding your team. Like if you're trying to do a play to win thing and you're speaking to someone who is playing to protect, you have to convert that language into why it fits into what they already know and have safeguarded. Whereas if you're talking to a play to win person, they're going to get all excited and riled up about, you know, where you're going. So it's making sure that you understand, you know, who do you have? Who are these people, right? How do you talk to them differently? But to understand as an organization, we need both to survive, to sustain for today, but also to grow for tomorrow.
How do you approach helping people? And then we'll see if we can tease out some things that our listeners could do just for themselves. And I think you start with assessments.
Yes. Yes, I do start with assessments because really for two reasons. One is speed. You know, we could have spent many coaching sessions together and not discovered, you know, what an assessment might reveal. And so I do always start with, you know, a number of different types of assessments, whatever is relevant. And so with the adaptability assessment at the individual level, it's understanding, you know, what might be those bothersome things for me, you know, at work, but understanding why they might exist. And then actually the assessment comes with a dashboard so that if I wanted to improve my grit or resilience, for example, you know, there is, you know, a dashboard of TED Talks, articles, you know, books, all different things that you can improve your grit or any of those types of things. So at the individual level, like if I'm working with a client now that, you know, also isn't bold when it comes to conflict, which a lot of people, we're either too bold or we're not bold enough, right? So to be able to do a conflict style and to understand, you know, am I highly competitive when it comes to conflict, or am I an avoider or am I too accommodating? I mean, the data gives us insight to be able to quickly move into the coaching that's appropriate for the individual.
Do you find after people do the assessment that they're surprised with their level of adaptability?
Well, sometimes, and I think it's with all assessments. I mean, I've done so many. There's always the question like, I didn't know about that question, or, you know, they always question the assessment validity first, right? But yes, they do. There are surprises, you know, certainly, and and also, like, I'm currently working with an organization to improve customer satisfaction scores, and they've all taken the adaptability assessment, but also surprised to see that in my work with them, that if a lot of people, it's a very highly compliant organization, so they're much more about play to protect. So what I know from that information is hearing from customers and what the customers need, that we have to take small incremental steps to improve customer satisfaction scores. We can't do something radical because this is a team of people are not going to move towards radical as quickly, but that might be totally different, you know, in another organization.
What makes for a good assessment? Like, what should somebody, if I'm trying to look at the landscape of, like, I need to assess my team, what goes into a good assessment about qualitative things like this?
Yes, well, I think it's certainly making sure it's relative to what you're trying to achieve and really asking yourself, like even finding out about conflict management styles, you know, is it because you have conflict that exists? Do you want to improve it in that? Or the adaptability is relevant to a number of different things. If you're facing change, if you want to improve the agility, you know, of your people, if you have retention, you know, concerns, or if you have a big digital transformation you're rolling out in your organization and you want to see who your early adopters are versus your laggers so that you can spend more training time with the laggers, you know, you can do that as well. So it's the relevancy, but then also looking at what types of assessments might your people enjoy doing? Because I think people are over-assessed, especially within organizations. And also, more importantly, how is the information going to be used? So, for instance, in this team that I'm currently working with, I'm not reporting any individual adaptability scores to the organization. They've got them on their own. They understand how to interpret them, and they understand how to improve upon them if they wish. But instead, we're looking at how is the overall adaptability scores related to customer satisfaction and delivering that?
What are some key indicators of a team's readiness for change?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, a couple of different things. As one, you know, in that case, since it's an organization-wide, the adaptability assessment also gives you a change readiness score, you know, of your organization and of the teams, because it might be different teams that are more highly adaptable than others. But it also looks at your environment. And because, again, if you have an environment where there's not psychological safety, where people don't feel that they're supported by the company, you know, or they don't feel supported by the team, or there's high work stress, or a lot of, you know, organizations are talking about wellness in the organization. I mean, it's being aware of those environmental factors that might influence, you know, how fast your people are going to move or not, or what resistance you might be met with. And then to address those things at the same time as you're doing your change implementation.
You know, as a consultant to an organization or a coach, I'm really kind of just the bridge builder of interpreting the data, you know, and understanding the goals, right? The vision of the organization or their goals, and then only, you know, providing what's relevant in that building of the bridge.
Can you give us some examples of companies that you've worked with, you know, not necessarily naming names, but examples of where this has been done well, and maybe even some examples when it hasn't been done so well?
Yeah, thinking of, you know, what may be relevant to a number of different organizations is that, you know, no department works by itself. They have to partner with other departments, right? So one is especially if you're supporting in other departments, how do you move from being viewed as a transactional support team and versus a strategic partner? So in order to develop and see yourself as a strategic partner to the other business units and internally, you know, first is and working with a team that wanted to, you know, make that shift of developing strategic partnerships with other departments. First, we had to work on the adaptability piece about the mindset, like identifying what is a strategic partner anyways? You know, what does that mean to me? You know, how, you know, does it mean I'm a, you know, an expert? Does it mean that I'm, you know, a colleague, a partner? You know, really identifying what that means to me, but then also looking at the mindset, because in working with that particular team that had kind of worked very proficiently as a silo, that there were some individuals with that team that weren't as excited about going out and meeting more of the other departments, right? Or might be a little bit more introverted or shy, but doing the skill building of, as a strategic partner, you know, how do I show up in those meetings, knowing that I'm shy or afraid to have them, and then some coaching around, well, what do I say in those meetings? How do I present myself as a strategic partner? How do I show that I'm adding value? Or even how do I make sure that my priority is as important to this other department that I need support in, you know, to convince them to support me? And then, you know, to be able to have that, you know, resilience and the willingness to see the opportunity of who do you become in this new process of becoming a strategic partner. And that, so that's where the adaptability assessment had some roots, but then grew into the building of the strategic partnership. And then we were able to actually track, because of some financial impact, a 162% return on investment of that particular project.
You said something in there too that I feel like we always are working on to try to get better and better at, is you can tell people what the changes that needs to happen, but it has so much in how you do it. Like you said, it's like specifically how you say it. And that's where I feel like coaching can be so valuable, because for each person, it can be a little bit different about how to get from here's what you need to do to here's how you personally get there.
Yes, and sometimes I find, and I'm actually coaching a team about this now, is it's not as much about telling as it is asking, for example. And so for this particular team that's working on the customer satisfaction scores, what I found after interviewing customers is that the team members are excited to meet their needs. They write it down on a piece of paper or whatever. They run off and they go and do it. But their customers are saying, sometimes I don't get what I'm looking for. Like, you know, I don't know if they understand what my request is. So coaching them about asking three to five clarifying questions, like asking, you know, what if you're looking for this, item in your dashboard of your budget, you know, how might that be helpful for you? You know, what's the impact of not having that information? So they understand the frustration level, they understand why the person wants it. And even, you know, if you were to get that, what type of form do you want it in? You know, to be able to ask some clarifying questions. And it's the same way when you're talking about change, it's being able to ask the people, you know, do you see how this fits? You know, do you see where we're going with this? Do you see why this decision was even made? You know, what do you see as your role in this? How can I support you in this, buddy?
So do you have a tip for helping leaders get that across to their team?
If they don't see the value in the change. Well, I mean, it is about the communication of, again, of by the changes taking place and all of that. But I'll tell you, it really is about shifting the mindset, and you have to bring in the people along. And I'll share when I was my brief stint as a psychotherapist, I used to specialize in obsessive compulsive disorder. I mean, people who were really trapped in their homes and their own mindset, couldn't, you know, get out without touching the doorknob 60 times. And one person was afraid of contamination and dust. And I purposely told the janitorial service not to clean my office so that when she came in, you know, she might have to touch the surfaces. Or somebody was afraid of getting in the elevator. Day one, it's like, okay, there's an elevator outside my hall. Let's go do it together. I mean, sometimes we do have to get thrown into things, right? Because that's just how the world is. But we can bring things along by understanding what were those people's, you know, fear or hesitancy, or what is they're really thinking about it. You know, I knew, you know, what the underlying roots were of my psychology clients as to what we needed to pull out as the roots that were keeping them trapped in their homes or they're, you know, overly clean.
For those people that aren't really that, don't have that sort of same appetite that you do.
Yeah, I've jumped around. I'm a lifelong learner. I probably learned at a very young, you know, age to adapt to different circumstances. So I'm certainly, you know, probably more on the adaptable side, you know, therefore the renegade leader name, right, of the company. But certainly understanding that, you know, people feel safe in what they know, right? They feel safe in the jobs that they've been successful in. And they're also not feeling as safe now being asked to change, and also being, you're seeing these statistics of, you know, jobs might be gone. You might have to learn a whole different thing, a different way. And so to really ask yourself, I mean, what might I just want to take that baby step into, you know, and learning. And I love your organization because I think self-learning really helps to open the doorway of the mind. I think little hinges open up big doors. So taking one class, right, could open up a whole new avenue for somebody. And, you know, so sometimes it's the willingness to realize, you know, little hinges open up big doors, and what is your little step that you could take?
What is one thing that we haven't talked about today, Deborah, that you want to share with us about your book?
Well, I did enjoy writing the stories in the book. I mean, I really did, you know, enjoy that. My husband doesn't know that he's actually featured in a couple of them. But and one of them, I forget where it is in the book or whatever. I mean, it's like, you know, very simple. I came home one day and we had like this, you know, stairwell going up with a big Palladian window and a grand foyer. And my husband's up in the bedroom, trapped in there because a bird isn't in our bedroom. And when I arrive, he asked me, he's got it all planned out. And my husband's, you know, my husband's a dentist, so everything lines up in his life. The tools are where they're supposed to be. Teeth are pretty much where they're supposed to be, you know, whereas I'm all over the place. So when I go up there at the top of the stairs and I open up the door and he's like, oh, close it really fast and everything because there's a bird in here. Then he lays out his very strategic plan. He wants me to get a white sheet from the linen closet in the hall, then to open up the door, and then somehow I'm going to hold the sheet while the bird, you know, goes down the stairwell and out the front door. And it was in the, you know, in the late fall, and we take our screens off to put, you know, winter wreaths in for the holidays on our windows. And I knew the screen was off, and I said, or we could just open up the window. And sure enough, I opened up the window and out the bird went. And that's kind of like how we get trapped into our own thinking of even making it bigger and harder than it is. And sometimes, and, you know, I think I wrote, you know, changeability is your window, you know, just to, you know, find your way out of all this change that's happening. But and he doesn't know that story is about him.
I really love this expression, little hinges open up big doors. And if I was to encapsulate some of the things that I'm taking away from this, that certainly, as we move forwards, we're talking about adaptability, but even step back a little bit, your window is actually changeability, because it's going to include things like that ability to help lead through change, to be able to develop your own adaptability. That would be the interpersonal and intrapersonal skills, and there's a lot of them, but there are things that are attainable. And then, of course, that agility, the ability to create some speed and scale. You talked a lot about the things that I just think are so important, like the psychological safety, leaping forward. The like resilience is really leaping forward. That's a better way to think about it, and be careful of like grit, and of course that ability to unlearn, not just learn. There's a lot here. Head, heart, hands. What is your style? So that's an invitation to our listeners to explore some of these ideas, and of course, as I know Damon's gonna lean into like how people can reach out to you.
But before we get there, I want to give a special shout out to Biette Chalette for introducing us. Biette was a fantastic guest. We'll put her episode in the show notes. But yes, Deborah, how can we connect with you?
Yes, well, certainly I'm happy to connect with people on LinkedIn. I post different mini case studies there that might be, provide this, some instantly ready to use tips. I also, if anybody wants to schedule, how would this work for me? It's just simply schedule with Deborah, Debora.com. Makes it light and easy. And, certainly, happy to connect in any way.
I know I'm excited. We talked about this before we went on air, that Learned's going to engage with you and your team on the adaptability assessments. So we're really looking forward to that. And for everybody out there, do me a favor, rate and review the Learn It All podcast on whatever platform you're on. And if you're a leader out there, or you know of a leader who wants to continue to grow and evolve and change their organization, do me a favor and send this episode to them, because I know that they're going to get value out of it. And so I'd like to close it with what I always say, right, Darren, is stay curious, keep learning, and have a great day, everybody. Thank you.